everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood.
Welcome to Make Me Smart, our podcast where we try to get a little bit smarter every single week about business and culture and technology and honestly what's on our minds and yours as well.
And we are not alone in this endeavor because we also have you, dear listener. You tell us the things you really want to learn more about. I mean, you just keep telling us, but we're happy because we keep asking you. You will also share with us the things you know more about than anyone else because, as we like to say around here, none of us is as smart as all of us.
That is a fact. All right, so this week it's Alistra
Exactly. Such a long name.
All right, so this week we are talking with Alistra Mastromonaco. It's a harder name to say on the radio than you think. She used to be the deputy chief of staff for plans and logistics and all kinds of stuff at the Obama White House. Mm-hmm. She currently works at A&E. We're going to talk to her about life in the White House, life in a job that is huge. And also really important stuff like leopard print snuggies on Air Force One, which is true.
And we are answering your questions, checking the mailbox, listening to the audio memos that you have sent us. Thank you so much. We asked for them and we are getting them and they're awesome.
First, though, got to get the fix. This is what we call the News Fix, part of the show where we talk about stuff that is happening in the news that matters to us and to you. And there is, so very much this week.
Oh, my goodness. Let me just say that when we did our Monday morning editorial meeting on Facebook Live like we do, it went like this. Where do we even start?
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start.
Totally.
But let's begin with the biz fix, the business part of the show.
There is so very much going on out there that, honestly, it's all noise. We're going to roll a little noise here, and this is what it's going to be.
The FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election.
In what was essential, Trump was by his side.
Kind of justice that should replace justice.
People chose individualism.
So you get the idea, right? That was just yesterday. So let's just run through some of that stuff, right? We've got FBI Director Comey talking about Russian interference in the election and talking about an investigation of the Trump campaign. You've got Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, going to see Xi Jinping instead of going to a NATO meeting. That's kind of a big deal. And then he's going to Russia. You got the healthcare vote coming up on Thursday, and they're throwing sweeteners in there to beat the band to get the thing passed. You've got Neil Gorsuch and the Supreme Court nomination. And also, as I stand here looking at the markets on my handy-dandy computer screen that I have right here, the markets are look at this. So look, the NASDAQ's down 1.3, almost 1.4% today. And this is not something that's happened basically since like the inauguration for sure, and maybe even since Election Day. So there's lots of busy stuff going on. And when I say busy, I mean B-I-Z-Z-Y. It's business busy stuff. See what I did there?
That was an epic dad joke.
No, man.
That kind of was.
Seriously?
I'm sorry, but it just a little bit, it kind of was, yeah.
I hate you.
If you had tried to also make it into a rap thing, then it would have been the ultimate. The Uber dad joke. The Dow is off almost 1%.
Yep.
I mean, you have to assume that some of that is related to yesterday's hearings, right? I mean, that seems to throw the entire policy agenda, presidency, into turmoil.
I would suggest that the FBI acknowledging an open investigation into the campaign of the guy who eventually won the presidency in the United States is a factor in the markets today. But there's also, you know, healthcare is up in the air. I mean, that whole uncertainty thing, you know? But also it might just be more benign, right? It could just be traders saying, holy cow, things have been up way too long. We're going to take some money off the table. Could totally be that too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Just profit taking.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing about the market is that it could be anything.
Yeah.
The thing is, I think, is now we are starting to see, you know, we've been beating this drum on this show for weeks now, which is, if you don't get to tax reform soon, if you don't get to regulation rollback soon, then that business opt-in by you, I mean the President Trump, not you, Kai. No pressure, buddy. Then you start to see some of that business optimism fade.
And people are going, what the what? Now, can I do a little, if everything's a crisis, nothing's a crisis here for a minute?
Yes.
Would that be right? Okay. Because as we've talked about a couple of various threads of this basic idea, right? There's the normal versus not normal. There's the what the heck. And then there's the if everything is a crisis, nothing's a crisis. And if you remember right after the election and certainly right after the inauguration, a lot of the political left in this country was going, oh, my God, every time anything happened. And I kept saying, listen, if everything is a crisis, nothing's a crisis. And I think while there are some very big things happening now, I would offer the fact that not all of what is happening is a crisis. The markets, for instance, not a crisis, right?
Right.
Ivanka Trump
right.
getting a job in the West Wing, while bad in many ways, is not a crisis. The Comey hearings, crisis. The Secretary of State yeah. going to Asia without a press corps, I would throw that on the list of crisis issues. But not everything. I guess the point is like wheat from the chaff, right? We got to have a little wheat from the chaff here.
Well, there are different, look, there are obviously different things that matter to different people, as we've talked about a lot, right? There was at least one quote from a conservative strategist today saying, look, the only thing that matters, everything is just the noise that you just heard. And the only thing that matters to us now is the
healthcare right.
bill passing and Gorsuch getting confirmed. Everything else is just noise. Now, obviously, if you are a Muslim in America, you feel very differently
right,
about that.
Right.
And so the level of crisis, I think, varies based on who you are. I spent a lot of time at South by Southwest. I just sort of accidentally fell in with like, and this was the name of their group chat, the Muslims of South by Southwest.
Oh, wow.
And I can tell you, for one thing, it was wonderful. I had a super fun time.
Yeah.
But certainly the mood is not good.
Yeah.
The mood is not good. And I had at least one encounter that was clearly like a drunk racist coming after our group, you know?
Yeah.
There is that freedom. There is that happening that is all wrapped up in policy and permission, which we've also talked about. But so then the question becomes, which crisis do you own at any given time?
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the Ivanka job was a crisis when it was first suggested.
Yep.
Like when Trump first came into office and it looked like Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were going to get security clearance, that was a really big crisis.
Yep.
And now it seems like they just waited until there were like 17 more.
Well, right, right, right.
And well, scooted and that, it right on in yeah, under.
And that totally goes to, and people listening to this will, so first of all, please hit us up with your comments, right? It's makemesmartatmarketplace.org. You can get me and Molly on Twitter. She's at Molly Wood. I'm at Kai Rizal. But people will legitimately say to me now on Twitter, listen, Kai, you moron, what's happening here is that the bar is being lowered, standards are being lowered, everything is being normalized, and on a day when you can say that the president's daughter getting a security clearance and having a job in the White House without actually being on the White House staff is not a crisis, then you have lost perspective. And I guess maybe the response is with so many other things, it's gradations of things that matter because
right.
everything can't be a crisis. That's
yeah,
my sense.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's exhausting for one thing.
Well,
so
right.
you have to at some point, if every battle is a tough one, you have to pick the ones that matter most
right.
to you
right.
Or to your constituency. And so Maybe it's more like an even distribution of crisis. Like everything can't be a crisis to everyone, but if they are evenly spread out, they can be addressed one by one.
Here comes a little reality check, though, right? So we did on Marketplace, we did a series of shows and stories from Erie, Pennsylvania, right before Inauguration Day, and we talked to some people, and I'm totally sure I've mentioned this. I had breakfast with a bunch of guys who said, yeah, you know, Trump's been saying in this campaign what we've been saying around this breakfast table for 30 years. And I was like, okay, great. That's fine. About 3 weeks ago, I had Caitlin Esch, one of our producers, call back some of those breakfast guys and say, listen, what do you think of what's going on? Thinking that they would say, holy cow, this is crazy. And what they said was, yeah, not really watching the news so much, but looks good to me so far.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Also very important perspective.
So it's totally yeah. important for those of us whose job it is to be in and of the news every single day to go, wait a minute, what about the guy in Erie? Because the guy in Erie is like,
right.
no, man, all right. So he happens to be a taxidermist. He said, I gotta go stuff my animals. You know, that's true. It sounds funny and weird.
You know what we need now?
That's it.
I just realized that one of the little pieces that we're going to need is a sting for a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That's the t-shirt.
Yeah.
I got to go stuff my animals. I want to get my tech fix.
All right, go.
Real quick. Uber continues to implode. It
yep.
lost its president, as we talked about in our news meeting, after just 6 months on the job. And he issued he came from Target and he's like apparently just a really nice guy. And he issued a very nice guy statement on the way out the door, which I think you could safely interpret as these people are terrible.
Yeah.
So Kai asked the very prescient question, I thought, during our news meeting yesterday, which is it time for a grown up at Uber?
I believe it is.
And what do you think? Yes?
Me?
No? Maybe?
Me personally?
Can a grown up even help?
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, yes. Google Eric Schmidt. Come on. Sergey and Larry
yeah.
are bright guys.
So,
they're not jerks like Travis is. And let me say again, to justify me calling him a jerk, we've had him on Marketplace and he's a jerk. But come on, you need, these are big, ginormous companies, ginormous and important and influential companies in this economy, literally changing the economy. And the idea that you can be a jerk and run that company is not tenable.
Well, I don't, I think Steve Jobs was a big jerk and he ran Apple really well two times. So it's not the jerk factor.
Well, he ran it better when he came back, though, right?
Yes.
So maybe Travis ought to be fired and then he ought to come back chasing.
He needs to learn how to be a CEO.
Yeah.
But I think like we can trump the entire, and in the old sense, the entire conversation about what is or what is not a crisis.
Get it, Trump?
It's just like unusable. It used to be such a useful word and now it's unusable.
That is true.
But
totally
the
true.
Trump card that happened in the science and technology world today, sorry, this week, is that Chinese researchers have edited genetic disease mutations out of a viable human embryo, which means that actual gene editing is, for one thing, way closer than we thought it was going to be, thanks to the CRISPR technology that makes it cheaper and easier than previous gene therapy. And for another, means that, like, look, in 20 years, this could all be moot, because then we'll be talking about how we're a multi-species society and how do we extend, equal rights to unedited humans who are just regular old people.
Oh my God, you say that
the people
like,
of the future.
You say that like it's nothing, multi-species society.
So, okay. I do want to point out that we are doing a special episode next week on NAFTA. And
yes.
There is going to be, and this is important to say right now because it's really relevant to my interests, some avocado reporting. But if you, don't be surprised, it's partly because Kai is going to be out of town. So don't be surprised when there's not like a regular news fix. But also, if you have questions about NAFTA, now is your chance. Obviously, Marketplace is doing a great series, you know, on Kai Show about NAFTA and what it's meant for America. But we're going to dig in our special way. If you have those questions, email us at makemesmart.com. At marketplace.org, or of course you can tweet us about anything. That's at Kai Rizdahl and at Molly Wood.
Also, week after next, April the 3rd, we're going to do that week. We're going to do a tax show, not deductions. And can I, you know, deduct my magazine subscriptions, but tax policy. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Hit us up with your policy questions, and because we're going to talk to some really interesting people, including the CEO of H&R Block, actually, about the business of being in the tax business.
Next up, though, we have Alyssa Mastromonaco on life in the White House and life after the White House. All right, this week on the show, we talked with, I'm going to say it again, Alyssa Mastromonaco,
show
who was, I practiced so many times before the show. She was the youngest woman to become a deputy White House chief of staff under Barack Obama. Before that, she was his director of advance and scheduling, which I'm pretty sure after reading the book is the hardest job that has ever existed. She did that same job for John Kerry during his failed 2004 campaign as well.
She is not in politics anymore now. She went on to be the COO of Vice. She's at A&E, and she has a book out. It's about the White House as a workplace. It's called Who Thought This Was a Good Idea? It is not, we should tell you, your typical White House
like,
memoir.
I think in the first chapter, or maybe the second, there's a story about how she got a tampon machine installed in the women's bathroom at the White House, which, you guys, there wasn't one, which is crazy. Anyway, not typical at all. Here she is, Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Well, I think that most people who have written sort of, post-White House memoirs, a lot of them are very focused sort of on their place in history, maybe. And I wanted to write something, and it doesn't feel attainable, right? It's basically written for a person who sort of knows what's been happening for the past 8 years. And I wanted my book to be something that a young woman or young man could pick up and say, oh, I can do this. You know, this isn't out of my reach. And it's not just about politics. It's about anything that seems hard.
Yeah, it's a little bit about life, right? I mean, the message I took from this book was, look out when your identity becomes so wrapped up in where you work and the job you do. Because that was really hard for you as you were leaving.
It was. It was really hard. I mean, not only had I worked for Barack Obama, you know, 10 years, but I had worked with Jon Favreau for like 12 years. These people were my family. And I didn't know how I would move on, but I also knew that I always wanted to be giving 120%, and I felt like I was giving 100% because I was tired.
I feel like giving 100% is allowed, but yeah. The biggest takeaway for me was I read your packing list on page 60, the list of things that you would always pack for every trip. And I want to know about nap socks. On your list, there's this thing called nap socks. And I have never heard of that. And I totally want to know. Like, you have special fuzzy ones.
So you want comfortable socks.
Just for napping? Or like for anything?
Well, it's mostly for napping because when you're on Air Force One, you, first of all, it gets very cold on Air Force One when you fly overnight. And most of us would sleep on the floor because it's more comfortable than the chairs. And so, you know, if you brought your clothes that you were getting off the plane in, you'd have like a suit or something very proper. So we always wanted to make sure that we had like warm, fuzzy socks for whenever we would be on the plane.
I'm so glad I asked because I never would have guessed that you were sleeping on the floor of Air Force One. Amazing.
So, that's amazing.
I'm sure that you guys know what a Snuggie is, right?
Yeah,
from QVC.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of Snuggies too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were there like White House branded Snuggies?
No, there weren't White House branded Snuggies, but two of my favorite people, we were going on a very long trip once and they brought several Snuggies on board and they were all used.
Wow.
Yeah, I bet. True story. Mm-hmm. I own a leopard print Snuggie and I might take it on my next flight, which won't be on Air Force One, obviously. But
well, there were some leopard print Snuggies on Air Force One.
So this book is it's not chronological, right? The stories kind of jump all over the place, which is great, right? It keeps you on your toes as to what's going on. But you do it by theme. And two of them were humility and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing I need to ask you about. Humility and self-awareness are notoriously lacking in political Washington.
Yes.
You know, do you guys know that when you're inside the bubble, I guess is the question?
So I think that we did. You know, I think that we were all very aware that we were here we served at the pleasure of the president and we were there to serve the American people. It wasn't about us. And I think that, you know, Washington could do with a little bit more humility, but I think I was always just very aware, having been on a losing campaign and being in Washington when I worked for Senator Kerry when he ran for president. One minute you're the toast of the town and the next minute you kind of can't get a table. So, you know, and I think that it was a very specific, you know, running that campaign actually ran out of Washington as opposed to Obama, who ran his campaign out of Chicago. And it's just like this weird, it's like the cult of D.C. and it's like super depressing. So I was glad we got out of Chicago. But then I think having been in Chicago, when we got to D.C., we still just understood that, you know, we had a mission. The mission was the American people and not, you know, getting the best table at Cafe Milano.
How do you, just as a person who was on the inside for so long, and now as a person who is not only on the outside but is in the media, how do you view the current state of affairs?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Isn't it? Well, you know, at least I came at it with you knowing exactly where it was going.
You had to
right?
know.
Come on.
You had
let's
to know.
Own,
oh,
I'll,
my
I'll
goodness.
Own that one.
So I'll tell you that it's so here's how I actually look at it. I am not naive or juvenile. I know that, you know, politics is a pendulum. It swings back and forth. There are winners and losers. I expected when I saw Donald Trump win and President Obama really just reach out and say, you know, come on over, like we're going to help you transition. So when I saw the president, I said, you know what, I'm positive Donald Trump's going to moderate. He's going to everybody thinks he's a Democrat anyway. I'm sure it's going to be fine. And like now it's not fine. It's not fine at all. And I see them transition and I think to myself, you know, it almost seems like they are ending protocols and customs and how things were done for sport because they think that we made them up and it's just a sport to kill anything that Barack Obama did. But the funny thing is so many of the customs, how you behave in the Oval Office, how, you know, when you use the rooms that you use, it's important how you vet candidates. You know, it's important and it saves everybody time and money and protocols actually, you know, make people more comfortable because they know what to do. So, you know, I kind of hope that they take a beat, you know, after the first 100 days and understand that there's a lot of good in what's already there and they don't need to destroy it all.
One of the things that's also clear in your book is how complicated it is to work in the White House, how many people there are, how many different sort of hands have to be shaken and meetings have to be held. How much harder is all of that when, as has been reported, there's like literally not even enough staff?
I honestly can't imagine, because we were all, you know, lockstep. We couldn't have tried to be more of like a team from the minute that we got in there. And the thing that I hear is, you know, when you read the articles about how, you know, the State Department career staff are drinking coffee in the cafeteria because, like, basically the State Department is home alone. I can't tell you how important those people are, whether it is, you know, preparing to take the president on a foreign trip, which is more complicated than anybody could possibly understand, or, mm-hmm. you know, dealing and preparing as a crisis is unfolding. You know, you need those people who have been there term over term, because they kind of are the continuity of government. So to malign them as like Obama holdovers is, you know, most of those people were probably here since President Bush at least.
Do you think, you know, you said you wrote this book because you want more women in government. You talked about all the things that are not normal right now. Do you think you might still go back?
I would have to say that, you know, one of the things that I also tried to get across to young women is that the reason that I was successful, I believe, is because I followed my gut and always worked for people who I believed in. And so if Barack Obama had not won in 2008, it wouldn't have been a lost experience for me. It still would have been incredible. And so I'm hoping that, you know, other women see this and they say, you know what, this is a person. Maybe they're a state senator. Maybe they are, you know, their local congresswoman. Maybe they're getting involved in the school board. But for me personally, if I saw one of my, you know, sort of political heroes toss their hat in the ring, it would probably be pretty hard to say, I'm just going to sit here on my couch and watch you on MSNBC. Like, that would be very hard. So I could never say that I wouldn't get back in it.
Alyssa Mastromonaco there. Her new book is called Who Thought This Was a Good Idea? It's about her life in the White House and beyond. It is out today.
Today. Next up, Alyssa answers our Make Me Smart question, and you do too.
First, though, as always at this time in the program, got to pay the bills. All right, so two things before we go on. Number one, our producer, Jenny Josephson, was in New Orleans this weekend, hence the music, if you're paying attention. Mm-hmm. Also, number two, can I tell you real quick my Blue Apron story?
Yes, I love a Blue Apron story.
We had the CEO of Blue Apron on Marketplace about 2 years ago, and to prep me for the interview, they said, would you like a meal, and so you can figure it out and experience it before you talk to the CEO? And I said, yeah, sure, great, I've got a family of six. What they sent me and what I wound up cooking and what turned out to be pandemonium in my kitchen was not one meal for six people. It was three meals for two people, which I didn't really know until I had gotten going. But I will tell you, the perfectly proportioned things and the recipe cards, that is all true. I would just say that there's a fair degree of chaos when you're doing three meals instead of, you know, one. That's it.
Okay, what happens to me with Blue Apron all the time, too, is I have too many and I don't eat them in time. And so I end up just mixing and matching, like I make two in one night. And then we just call it buffet.
And right here,
Blue Apron buffet.
Right here, the Blue Apron people are going, what are you doing? Don't do that. We perfectly proportion everything.
This is how everyone lives.
It's regular life. All right, we had one more question for Alyssa. Mr. Mastromonaco, it's our Make Me Smart question. What is something you thought you knew but later found out you were wrong about? Here's what she said.
I think that I thought I knew in the very beginning what leading a team meant. And I thought it meant like being the boss and, you know, like telling everybody what to do. And sometimes, and what I learned kind of when I came out of the White House is that sometimes being the boss means like just leading the team. Do you know what I mean? It's like I'm not sitting there telling everyone what to do, but we were just like this squad and everybody's input, you know, was super valuable. And that's how we sort of came to our best results and our best products. So sometimes it's like being the person who is reining everybody in and not telling everybody what to do.
She has a pretty good story about that in the book, too, about how she was a paralegal and they called her the super para.
Oh,
because
wow.
She was doing all the work herself. And only when she screwed it up completely did she discover that being called the super para was not a nice thing. It's a really funny book. All right. Last week, we asked you for your answer to the Make Me Smart question. And we got some. Shelley Sackier is the winner this week. She sent us a great one.
Hey, Molly. Hi, Akai. I'm here to weigh in on the Make Me Smart question of what is something you thought you knew and later discovered you were wrong about. I was raised in a super competitive atmosphere. Failure was not an option. And then I raised a kid who decided to study aerospace engineering. I'm pretty sure her first words were jet propulsion. And now she's done 3 internships with NASA. Anyway, I was lucky enough to score a tour on one of their facilities and came back with a surprising conclusion that failure was something these folks embraced almost the same way you'd hug a somewhat smelly old aunt. Oh. Not necessarily your favorite activity, but super necessary if you're bent on doing the right thing. Anyway, NASA prepares for failure gravely and relentlessly. In fact, I discovered they've got an abort procedure for everything. Pad, launch, ascent, in-flight, and even the one everybody wishes that they had in their car for an annoying passenger, ejection. The result may be called failing, but the rest is called learning. And most people who have had any splashy headline success in their lives will be the first to tell you that before they found the thing that worked, they found a million things that didn't. Because errors are normal and mistakes are natural. And failure is fated. But what it doesn't have to be is the end. And I know all this now. Anyway, cheers, guys. P.S. Brilliant show.
All right, we're not playing it just because of that, but that was a very nice thing to say. That's really good, right? Failure is not the end. That's actually really good. I like that. I love that.
And it's easy to forget in the age of the internet where everybody is so excited to criticize you for every little thing that it's also still okay to be a human. Still okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will answer your questions about things in the news.
Tell a friend about a podcast you think they are going to love. Right now, think of somebody you care about. What podcast do you think they would really enjoy listening to?
And once you've got it in your head, go do this in real life. Or you could do it on social media. If they don't know how to listen to a podcast, show them how to download one. And please tell us what you recommended with the hashtag TryPod. That's TRYPOD. And thank you for spreading the word.
All right. As promised, your turn, your questions about things in the news. The question this week is about the national debt.
This is Bev Postman calling from Olympia, Washington. I don't hear a lot of talk anymore about the national debt, which I believe is about $19 trillion. And now Trump is talking about doing all these infrastructure builds. So my question is all of the money that they're going to spend on infrastructure and the wall going on the taxpayers' credit card like the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? Thanks.
Excellent question, Ms. Postman, or Bev, if I may. The short answer is no, and here's why. What the Trump administration is proposing, while being advertised as a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, is actually not that. It's $150 billion, plus or minus, in tax credits, tax incentives, that the White House is hoping will generate private investment, right? So it will be a lot of private money with a little bit of government seed capital thrown in there. The catch is that that is going to skew, that is going to change the kinds of projects that get spent on, because the companies who invest that money are going to want a return on it. So you're going to see things like toll roads and toll highways instead of, say, bridges and repaired, airport runways and stuff like that. So not on the government's dime, but very much changing kind of what gets spent. But that's a good question. All right. Some more emails that we just thought were good. Here we go.
Where do we mail a letter?
In the mailbox.
All right, here's one from Ed.
In the mailbox.
Here's one from Eric Redmond. He writes about the president's budget. He says, I see a lot of things in this budget that we would consider normal, along with a few that are very not normal. Some of the not normal, he says, is to be expected based on campaign comments by Mr. Trump. But he is worried, Eric Redmond writes, that people are now going to view this budget with many items cut to zero and completely freak out, which he says is an understandable response. But then accept that when they are raised a slight amount above zero, everything's going to be normal. And that is true. And one of the things that the president has had great success in doing is pushing lines and then backing away from them and everybody going, oh, this is fine. And we've seen that time and time again. So that's an interesting and observant point of view.
And by the way, this is where I should say that I would like to apologize to South by Southwest. There were a lot of people who tweeted me last week and said you sounded like you hated it. And previously, I have not had as much fun. But I will say that this time, I had a blast. Yes, it's partly because I got to enjoy a lot more music than I have in years past, but I had a really good time. So thanks for everything, South By.
So fun, according to Molly Wood. All right. Here's what we desperately need y'all to do. You see the y'all I threw in there because you're talking about Austin? Go to iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, please, would you? Well, I went to school in Atlanta, so I can say y'all. Subscribe to this podcast. It hooks us up. Tell a friend. Send us two things. One is your tax policy questions. Also, your NAFTA questions for shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. And we will love you forever.
Forever.
Ever.
And also keep the audio memos coming. They are absolutely delightful.
Yeah, those are great.
For those of you who have asked about Android, you do have to go download a separate app because they don't have it built in. I suggest that you can search for any of the ones called Voice Recorder. And there are six in a row called Voice Recorder, and they all have great reviews. So just pick one, make a recording, email it. We'd love it.
Bang zoom.
And now we have to go.
Make Me Smart, this very podcast, is produced by Jenny Josephson, Bridget Bodner, Raghu Manavalan, and the senior producer, Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Daniel Ramirez. The theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and that same Daniel Ramirez.
Those guys are brilliant. The executive producer of Marketplace is the also brilliant Sitara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is, of course, our very brilliant boss, Deborah Clark.
You're saying that just because you have to.
Nuh-uh.